Hi everyone, it's Russ. This episode's a little different than our previous one, so make sure to stay to the very end because we have some things we need to talk about. Alright? Enjoy the episode. So, we're beginning where the last session left off. You guys have just defeated this creature that had the ability to shapeshift. All that's left of it now is a pile of gray goo and a cracked red sphere in its center. The orb sphere thing that Malachi came down in has been tossed out of this ditch that you are all in. Malachi is currently on the ground groaning in pain, as you can see this golden plating on his arms begins to spread up his shoulders. But besides that, it is very quiet. The air is very still in the aftermath of this fight. What do you all want to do?
Well, so Gibbs looks around, sees Malachi in pain, sees the cracked red orb and the pile of goo. And Gibbs decides to go check out the goo. And just sticks their hand in it to see what it feels
like. Okay. So you're just shoving your hand straight into the goo. Are you trying to do anything special with it, or are you just shoving your hand in it?
Is it like Play-Doh? Is it like Silly Putty? Is it like just very watery, like, whatever?
So you
is it like fun to play with? Is it like that green slime that you get?
Fun to play with, not to eat.
That you like stick your thumb in and it makes that farting noise? Is it like that?
Oh my god, stop.
So you put your hand into this gray goo and it's less like slime and more like pudding, except wetter.
I'm not about it.
Okay, that's kind of gross. Gibbs is going to go pick up the red orb. I'm guessing, like, their hands are still, like, sticky with the goo, and so they, like, try to pick it up, and it's all slippery. But it's fine.
So it slips out of your hands a few times, then you wipe this glue off on the ground, and then you actually pick up the sphere, and you look at it. This little red orb is in your hand, and it's... For you, it's pretty big, because you have tiny, tiny hands. But you can see that there are a bunch of what look like small cracks, but in the very center of it, there is a very large crack which goes into this orb. It's not made of any sort of stone or anything. It seems to be almost metallic in a way. But it's not a metal that you recognize.
Interesting. Okay. I want to do, like, some sort of, like, history check to it, or, like, arcana check, but I'm not sure if that would even matter if it's, like, even a metal I don't recognize.
So, I would say that if you want to do a check, it would most likely be history.
Cool. Okay. Would you consider this a magical / alchemical / tech item?
Yes, I would.
Awesome. Then I get to use Artificer's Lore.
Yay.
I'm going to let you know right now that this check is going to be very difficult.
That's fine.
Doesn't hurt to try.
That wasn't that one. That's it. I'm throwing these dice away. My dice all hate me. Alright, so Gibbs is just gonna, like, sit down and just play with the orb, I guess. Well, I'm gonna guess that Holland is attending to Malachi, and so Gibbs is just occupying their time playing around with the orb.
So I'm gonna say that I follow Gibbs while they check out the goo/orb, just to kind of like make sure they don't get hurt or anything. And while they're playing with the orb, I just kind of like squat next to them and just watch it happen. just chilling next to Gibbs.
Meanwhile, Holland is with Malachi, with this poor man.
So, Vayu, you go and you hang out with Gibbs for a little while, just sort of watching them play in the goo, then pick up this orb and begin sort of tossing it back and forth between their hands, or playing a mini game of catch with themselves. and then Holland, you're like more concerned with the person who's on the ground, and you turn to Malachi. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to use a spell? Are you going to try and like...
Holland is tapped out, exhausted. He has nothing he can do besides try to identify what this is, mm-hmm. and how he could possibly stop it, whether it's magical means or mundane means or what have you. Mm-hmm. If I have the time, I could possibly use the identify spell as a ritual, because I can do that after like 10 minutes.
So, would you like to do that?
Malachi yeah,
probably, is like groaning in pain right now.
He is groaning in pain, so I probably shouldn't take the time to identify this thing. I should probably try to think of
it. It's totally up to you.
I'm gonna without using identify, I'm just gonna try to identify. I'm going to try to assess the situation.
Okay, so roll me a... Actually, you justify roll to me. What would you like to roll for this?
I don't really think it's medicine, because this isn't medicinal. This is like tech/arcana. This is like a magical thing, so arcana, right?
Yeah, okay. You can roll arcana for that.
I'm not good at arcana, but it makes sense. Well, that's a 6. Never mind.
Yeah. We're rolling bad tonight.
So, before, when Malachi first got out of the sphere, you had seen that it was down to his elbows. And then when that orb that he threw to the ground... There's a lot of orbs going on, guys. When he threw that sphere to the ground, that glass one that exploded in light, it began to spread further. And it spread up his forearm, and now it's onto his shoulders, and it's spreading across his chest. But looking at it, you have no idea what could have caused this. What could even do this sort of thing? You've heard stories of monsters that have the ability to turn people to stone, but nothing that can turn someone to gold, I guess, or like make his flesh gold. You're not exactly sure what's going on here.
Is it safe to touch the gold? Like,
if you want to touch it, do you want to try?
I'm gonna try to touch it.
You touch the ship, you take 4 fire damage.
I would say no, that's going to be, like, our thing. Just, I poke it.
I touch
it. I poke it with a stick.
So you go and you touch the gold. Are you going for, like, his arms, his forearms? Where are you going for? Are you just going for where it's spreading
from? The forearms, the shoulder. I'm going to try, because I want to, I'm going to try to carry him. Like, mm-hmm. we need to go someplace. So I'm going to see if I can hold him from there.
So you grab onto him and you begin to pick him up. And where you touch this gold, it's very strange because it has the sleekness of metal. It's very sleek and to the touch, but it's almost soft, like it's still flesh. And it is very strange to feel. But you can easily pick him up. You're strong enough to pick up this man.
Right.
Malachi is still groaning in pain, and he says, please, don't use any spells on me. It'll make it worse.
Do you know how to fix this? I'm trying to help you the best I can, but I don't know what this is.
Time is what I need. It can't get fixed any faster.
Alright. Bayou, can you help me carry him back to town?
Yeah? What do you want me to do?
Can you just by,
like, stands up.
Can you just grab him by the ankles and like,
yeah, yes.
Like, we can bring him back.
Okay, I do that.
I don't know where to take him though. The temple is useless at this point. If he says that there's no point taking him back to get help because it will just make it worse. I could take him back to my house or back to the forge, maybe.
We can take him to Evie. Evie knows how to fix all kinds of things.
Oh, Squirt, I don't really think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we don't really want to get anyone else into this. DM, where in relation to where we are right now is, like, on the most outskirts? Like, I'm trying to, like, go into town and, like, not encounter many people. So, like, where can I get to? Can I get to my house or the forge first?
So, you would be able to get to the forge first. You know that B lives closer to the entrances, because there's two entrances to the town. There's one to the north and one to the northwest. She lives closer to those areas, so she can get her metal deliveries from outside people. In addition, people who come in from hunting and stuff can come in and easily order arrows and things and then continue on into their homes.
Well, we have a metal delivery for her right now.
Shut up, Holly.
I hate you so much.
Wait, did you seriously not see that coming, though?
Like,
you
said, I did.
That's the first thing that comes into my mind.
Gods.
All right.
Gods.
Oh, Pantheon. Your house is further into town, though. You could go to your house, but you'd encounter more people.
All right.
But you also know that the ending ceremony of the festival has just occurred. Because you heard all the fireworks and everything, and that was the last event planned. Most people are either heading home, or they're heading to taverns to continue the party.
Alright, here's what we're going to do. I can get us into the forge. No one will be there, it's closer to where we are, and we can figure out our next move from there. I just need your help getting him there. We good?
Vayu just nods.
Alright. Gibbs, are you okay walking along with us, or do you want to go back? I don't know what you want to do.
You can get on my shoulder if you want. I don't want you to have to walk that far.
Well, I can help carry Malachi.
Just
kidding, I know I can't. I'll get on your shoulders.
If anything, you can just climb on top of him and make sure he's okay the entire time.
I need everyone to roll me a perception check as you're doing this.
All right, new set of dice. Let's see how this one works.
That was a natural one.
Good job.
Ooh!
Nice.
Wait, this is perception, right?
What's my perception bonus? I don't see it.
Otherwise. Right, we're rolling perception right now.
Yep, perception. I'm also going to roll for Malachi.
Kyle, I also rolled a nat one.
Virtual high five.
High five.
Love Sam, did you also roll the nat one?
No, I got a 14.
Because Malachi rolled a nat one.
Holy crap, what? Guys!
So that dice is going into the dice prison, and I'm gonna keep that there for a little while.
Yeah, I'm gonna move this one over to
naughty dice go to dice
jail.
Well,
now everybody has rolled their nat one for a night, so it's not gonna happen, right?
So you rolled the nat. You rolled nat ones, both Ollie and, I mean, Vayu and Holland. So you two are busy picking up Malachi and trying to carry him in a way that's comfortable.
I mean, yeah, it totally makes sense.
And Malachi's a Malachi's bit busy, with the pain. But you, Gibbs, after talking about not being able to carry Malachi, you look around and you see something strange is happening with Elsie. Where Elsie is standing, there seems to be this almost wind that's surrounding him. You can see that. You can see that the cloak that he wears is ruffling strangely, and he has this very confused expression on his face. As you stand there, this wind begins to pick up, and you watch as dust begins to appear. Little gray specks appear out of nowhere and begin to swirl around him very slowly, very methodically. It doesn't seem dangerous. The way that this is moving, it seems very careful, very cautious, very, very predetermined. What would you like to do?
Guys? Guys?
Gibbs?
And then Gibbs just kind of, like, points towards Elsie.
I look.
Can dirt do that? Is there, like, a weird wind thing? What's going on?
As you both look over and look at Elsie, you begin to watch as this little dust cyclone begins to glow higher and higher and begins to cover his arms and his neck, and then covers his face and covers his entire form. He is now in the center of this dust cyclone. And then the dust begins to move closer inwards. It stops moving in a circle and begins driving inwards. And then there's a figure standing in front of you, but it's not Elsie. There are no horns on this figure. It seems almost humanoid, but the only feature you can tell on it is a four-pointed star upon its chest. And then the dust stops moving and falls to the ground.
And just to clarify, Elsie's no longer there.
Elsie is gone.
Holland puts Malachi on the ground and just, like, wordlessly walks over to where he was, drops to his knees, and picks up the dirt and dust on the ground and just lets it flow from his hands.
Holland and Gibbs walks up next to you and, like, kind of, like, stays behind you as they look over to see what you were doing, kind of, you know, like, shyly. What happened to Elsie?
He was taken, I believe. That Gibbs was a god.
No, it was Elsie.
Yes, that was Elsie. Yes, that was Elsie.
So Elsie's a god?
No, Gibbs. The person, or the being with the star, that was dust. The combination of earth and wind manifesting in front of us. They have taken Elsie.
Why?
I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but dust has been known to do this before. And they needed Elsie for something very important, I guess. I don't know.
Holland, you would know that dust, this is just something you would know, dust is one of the more mysterious gods. Out of all 10, besides the Pantheon, dust is the one talked about the least. Some people say that this is because dust is technically the god of death. But the sense that you're getting from this, from how Elsie was taken, is that he wasn't taken forcefully. He wasn't hurt in any way. This was very careful. You get the sense that Elsie's okay.
Real quick, out of character question. What was, when Elsie had his card for the tarot reading, it was the doctor and who in the card?
It was the doctor and the corpse. The card was called the plague. But there was a card that you guys got during the fortune telling. The card was dust. It was death. Right. You were told by Miss Stars that death would be interested in your journey.
Mm-hmm. Holland is going to take Gibbs and, like, put him on his knee and be like, do you remember earlier when we were with Miss Star and she pulled the card for Elsie, and it was the doctor and the corpse. Remember that?
Yeah.
And she said, you're going to find out which one you are. I think dust is taking him on that journey. I think we don't know what's going to happen.
I didn't like those cards.
I didn't either.
I don't think anyone did.
Well,
but we don't have control over dust.
I mean, I guess there's nothing we can do now.
I think he's okay. He'll be okay.
Okay.
As you say that, you hear another groan from Malachi as you've placed him back on the ground to do this conversation.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, I also dropped him.
I placed him on the ground gently. I did not drop him.
He placed him down, and then I just dropped the feet and ran over. All
right. Real quick, I'm going to try to like, scoop up the dust that was left behind into like a pouch or something that I have.
Yeah, you can do that.
And try to save some. And be like, all right, Gibbs, we need to take Malachi back. All right. And he's going to run back and scoop him up and like, let's go, Vayu.
Yeah, and then I let Gibbs get on my shoulder, I guess.
Yeah.
And then pick up Malachi's feet. I like pat his leg and I'm like, sorry for dropping you.
All right.
It was a little pressing.
I'm not going to have you guys roll for anything to get out of the ditch. I assume that you all work together as a team to get Malachi and yourselves out of this ditch.
Thanks. We might roll a nat one again.
It takes a little time. Malachi's still in pain. You have to move him very carefully, but you do all end up getting out, and you start making your way back to the path that leads to town.
Oh, I'd also like to clarify that Gibbs, like, still has the red orb.
Yeah, that's fine. Did you do anything with the goo, or did you just leave it there?
I'm just gonna say, I don't have anything to put the goo
in. Please don't take the goo.
But, like, I want to.
You can take the goo.
But I don't have anything to put the goo in. It's just gonna be, like, all over Gibbs' hands.
And therefore, all over Vayu's head.
I'm not gonna force you to go buy vials or anything so you can carry things. As long as it's not, like, super flammable explosives, I'm not gonna force you to have, like, things for it. So you can say that you had a little vial that you put some of the goo into.
Yeah, then Gibbs was definitely doing that when they were, like, playing with the goo.
Yeah, that's totally fine by me. Just because I'm letting Holland take some dust in a pouch that he doesn't have on his character sheet, so it's fine.
We took samples. We're
I'm not going to be that uptight about your inventory. Okay, so you guys begin to head back onto the path. Are you guys just making your way directly to town?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to the Heart and Hearth.
Okay. So, as you approach the gates of Ragan, you begin to see a sort of gathering by the gates. There seem to be a lot of people standing there, standing around. They seem to be very intense. A lot of them are having heavy conversation. And you can see that there's someone in the center sort of pointing and like saying things to the rest of these people who are all turned in a semicircle facing them.
Do we recognize any of the people?
You can roll me perception.
I am going to roll a perception.
Can I as well?
Yes, also? You may.
I'm going to do me as well also. That's not much better.
Why do these dice hate me?
Also a 9.
I got a 6.
So it's 2 9s suck. And a 6. So what you can tell from this distance is that these people are heavily armored. From the look of it, you would guess that they're town guards, but you don't really know what's happening or what's going on. You'd have to get closer.
This is the main gate, you said, right?
This is the main gate to the north.
There's no like side entrance or anything like that. It's just we have to go through this gate.
There's another gate to the west. There is. You could go to that one if you so wish.
All right. Gibbs kind of pulls on Vayu's hair a little bit.
Okay. Stop, horsey, stop.
Basically.
It's Ratatouille. All
right, continue.
Do you guys know what's going on over there?
No, but I don't think I want to know either.
Should I check it out? Because I don't think you guys should bring Malachi close to that.
I agree.
I'm not sure if they would like aliens, or time travelers, or whatever you are, Malachi.
How about we try to go to the west gate and see if we can get in that way?
Okay, yeah, yes.
I don't want to go through all these people with Malachi. There's a lot of explaining I don't want to do right now.
Yeah, I agree.
I wonder what's going on.
We'll find out in due time, Gibbs.
Yeah, and I don't think we want to right now.
First things first, we need to get Malachi someplace to rest.
Alright, so you guys begin making your way towards the western gate. In order to do this, you have to sort of walk through the forest and head that way. Who is leading the group? Because there are two people holding a person and one child sitting on top of a person.
I assumed Holland was, because I don't think Vayu knows where the Heart and Hearth even is.
Yeah, I feel like he's walking forward with, like, carrying Malachi by his shoulders from the behind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm
keeping him that way.
So you guys begin to head towards the western gate. Holland, can I get a survival check from you?
Is it just to see if we find our way there?
21.
Hey!
Okay, fair enough.
We're gonna use that die for now.
Things are looking up.
So, you're not sure why, but walking through this forest, you are very confident in your steps. You haven't really left the city, but just, it's almost something innate in you. You know where the other entrance is. You've been there before, you've never left, but you just know where it is. And you get there in record time. You don't get lost, you don't get distracted by anything, you just get there. And when you get there, you notice that on the wall, there are two guards, but they seem to be having this conversation. They seem very distracted. What do you all want to do?
Quietly, I feel like, enter the city.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like a stealth check isn't really needed, but like, let's try to be as inconspicuous as this weird group of people can be.
So...
Wait, sorry. You said that we were by the gate and there were two guards there?
There's two guards on the top of the walls, but they're having a conversation. Oh, they seem very distracted. Oh, they're...
Okay, I was about to
say... Yeah, they're up. They're not just standing there. No.
Okay, if they're up, then, like, we just kind of... It's like the thing where you walk confidently. Yeah, it's like, don't act like you're being suspicious. Like, act like you know what you're doing and no one should stop you.
So are you rolling performance or stealth for this?
I would love to roll performance instead of stealth. I would love to.
I would love to roll stealth. But you see, as a dexterous monk.
I'm a big guy wearing lots of clanky armor, so stealth isn't very good for me.
That's fair. We can roll performance.
Sure. I would argue that Gibbs wouldn't make any role, just literally being along for the ride.
Well, I'm going to say you have to make a role because you're on top of someone. So, like, your movements can influence Vayu's movements.
All right. That's fair. Let's try a different set of dice.
We're doing performance?
About the purple ones.
Good news is that I'm pretty charismatic. Well. Nice! Okay. Let me know when you're good.
I got a 10.
I got an 18.
18, okay.
I got an 8.
8. So, 8 God. For the two of you. Okay, cool.
Wait, great. DM, can I ask a thing? You say they're having a conversation up top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would Gibbs possibly be able to use their goggles of the night to get a closer look to see if they could read lips to see what they're talking about?
Sure. You can roll me a perception.
That's real specific.
Actually, roll me investigation.
Okay. All right. Investigation. Awesome. My investigation is a million times better than my perception.
Sam.
It's a 7.
For those who's listening to this podcast, Sam is not making a happy face. It was a 7.
Yeah. I rolled a 2.
F.
All my dice hate me today!
Press F to pay respects.
So you take a look through your goggles, and you really can't tell what they're saying, and you realize that you've never really tried to read lips before. So maybe this wasn't the best idea, but hey, you can totally try it again in the future. But in addition, because you're from, like, a below angle, the angle to their mouth is a little weird, so you can't really tell what they're saying. So you can't really tell what they're saying, but the three of you do pass through the gates undetected. Malachi rolled a 14 with disadvantage, so good on
him. I'm proud of him. He was just like, hey guys, don't mind me.
So you guys head to the Heart and Hearth. You can still tell that the party is booming. You can hear bards playing music from the center of town. You can see lights on in taverns. You can hear the raucous sound of laughter. But there's a strange sort of heaviness on this night for the three of you. It's been a very long day, from a dark prophecy to saving a child to this person who fell out of the sky to a beast who could transform into you. It has been quite the day. And when you guys enter the Heart and Hearth, the forge is off, as Holland had remembered to turn it off in the past episode, which was good.
The forge isn't on fire when we show up.
You are all awesome in the Heart and Hearth without any troubles. What would you like to do?
Sit down. I'd like to sit and just relax for a minute. Mm-hmm.
Gibbs gets off Bayou's shoulders.
Thanks.
I'm gonna try to find, like a sack and some straw or whatever, and, like, make something comfortable for Malachi to lay on and continue his pain.
Yeah. So you make a makeshift pillowcase, basically, for him to lay on. And you notice that Malachi has actually passed out. But it seems that this golden light has stopped spreading. It is now around, like, his upper chest area. It's gone pretty far down his upper chest, but it hasn't gone up his neck at all, or down to his hands yet. But the glowing from the bracelet seemed to have completely stopped.
Howland just sits next to him and just, like, watches him and says, "Let him sleep. We can figure out what's going on in the morning, I guess. The two of you can stay here if you want."
Evie would be really mad if I don't get back soon. I probably should have been back a long time ago.
Yeah, and I should let my mom know I'm not dead or anything. It's just kind of good. "Hey, Mom, just checking in. I'm still here. So that's good."
Alright.
We could meet back here in the morning.
Yeah.
Gibbs, I guess I could meet you outside the orphanage and walk you. I'd like to walk you over.
I can walk here on my own.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
They've made the trip many times before. They're no strangers to this place.
I don't get lost.
Okay. I trust you. I trust you. Okay.
I'm going to stay the night here. As uncomfortable as it will be. Can't wait to sleep on a stone floor.
And you just gave away your only makeshift pillow.
It's living. So, you're two off then? You're both off?
Yep, okay, bye! Yeah.
Meet you here tomorrow.
Can't believe Stan, what am I going to do with you?
Yeah, gone. So I peace out.
Okay. So
I go home.
So the four of you peace out, for lack of a better term.
As they say.
We are going to follow Gibbs first, since Gibbs basically sprinted out the door.
Gibbs said, "Okay, bye!"
So Gibbs, you're heading back to the orphanage, correct?
Yeah.
Right.
And Gibbs is covered in, like, dirt and goo at this point.
And you also have a cut on you, too.
Oh, there's a cut?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, because you got attacked by the creature.
Oh, yeah. Where's that cut? Like, on Gibbs's arm or something? Oh, probably.
God, I forgot about that.
Guys, it's been a while since we recorded last, so we're not exactly sure where this cut is, but you're cut somewhere.
So, yeah.
Evie's gonna come to Vayu's house and murder them in their sleep. For that.
Okay, so yeah, Gibbs, despite everything that's happened, Gibbs is still, like, just really curious about this orb, and has kind of, like, put all their focus onto that, and so has kind of, I don't want to say forgotten about everything else, but that's kind of, like, in the back of their mind. And so Gibbs just, like, walks straight into the orphanage, like, it's nobody's business, like, nothing's wrong, and walks in with the orb in their hands, and just kind of, like, looks around to see if there's anybody up and moving. See if Evie's there specifically.
So when you enter the orphanage, you know that normally it's quite the hustle and bustle, but with it being so late at night, especially after the huge festival, it's quite deadened here. It's very quiet, everyone seems to be resting, but you can hear conversation from upstairs.
Okay, Gibbs is gonna follow the conversation, get closer to see what's going on.
Alright, you head upstairs, and you eventually find that this conversation is coming from Evie's office. The door is closed, but you can hear a few voices talking very quietly with one another. You do recognize one of them as Evie, and another one is Ezra.
So Gibbs is going to put their ear up against the door and mm-hmm. be very, very quiet and listen very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. So you lean up against the door. I want you to roll me a... Let's go investigation on this one.
Yay, investigation. Actually,
no, perception.
Oh, why?
Because perception is how well you perceive things, and this is hearing, so perceive it.
So perceive it.
You're right, but... Okay, guys, decide for me. Red, green, or black?
Green. Purple.
I'm gonna go with black. Alright. Nat 20! Oh, hey! Yeah! I made the right choice. Let me get all my black dice out of here first.
So, with a natural 20, you push your ear up against this door. And I'm not going to RP me having a conversation with myself, so I'm just going to summarize the scene. You can hear Evie and Ezra talking to one another, and there's a third voice. It's not one you recognize, but... it's definitely someone who knows Evie and Ezra. This conversation seems to be about someone who's not around. They're talking about, I don't know where they are, I don't know what happened. And it's not for a few seconds that you realize that they're actually talking about you. When they say, last time I saw them, they went with Vayu towards the cliffside. You especially hear Evie say that, well, when Gibbs left, they went to where they normally go to see the lighthouse. And this other voice sort of gruffly sort of grunts and says, well, we need to find him. Captain Akira needs to talk to them, especially now that the ambassadors have met. We need to have a conversation. So whenever Gibbs shows up, let them know to come. Well, at least let Akira know. They'll send some guards over. Evie sounds very stressed, and she says, she begins asking this guard if he thinks that you're in danger or if you're hurt, and begins asking him questions about what might have happened, why they're interested in you, what's going on, and the guard just sort of waves it away, not physically, but like... shakes his head and says, no, I can't share the information, ma'am. Sorry about that. Gibbs, what do you want to do?
Okay, so this might sound like a weirdly specific question, but does this door, like, open into the room or out of the room? Like, towards the hallway or towards, like, the room?
Into the room.
Oh, jeez, okay. Because, like, here's my thinking behind that. Is if it opened, like, outwards, like, into the hall, Gibbs would hide behind, like, where the door would open, you know?
I got you.
Yeah.
But, you know what? I still think Gibbs would wait for that third voice to leave. I would still wait, like, on the one side of the door where they think that that person is not going to look if they, like, turn to go out. You know?
Mm-hmm. So you wait a few more minutes. It's not long. You can hear that their conversation's ending. They're saying their goodbyes. The guard is saying to keep an eye out for Gibbs and let them know when you show up. And you begin to hear footsteps heading towards the door. Very heavy footsteps. Sounds like they're wearing armor of some sort.
Gibbs is just standing on like one side of like the door frame where they think like... you know, on the opposite side of, like, the way to go out, you know? And it's just kind of like making themselves like kind of small and quiet and just not saying anything. Not exactly hiding, but just hoping not to be noticed. Yeah, stealth.
Yeah, when you're a foot tall, it's pretty easy.
That's a 9.
It's a 9.
Samuel.
Yeah. Below average.
What's up with these dice?
The guard the door opens, and the guard steps out. And he begins to walk towards the staircase, then pauses and turns around and makes eye contact with you and says, Gibbs, is that you?
And Gibbs gives a small little wave, hugging like the orb to their chest with one arm and like waving with their other hand.
Mm-hmm. Evie, hearing the guard say this, bursts out into the hallway and sees you instantly. And you can see this concern and worry on her face, and then she quickly hides it. But she looks at the guard and says, Sir, could you please give us a moment? I would like to speak with Gibbs. I'd like to have a conversation with them before they go with you. Is that alright? And the guard gives Evie a nod and heads downstairs towards the front entrance. And then Evie looks at you and gets onto one knee to try and get as even with you eye level as she can. And she looks at you and says, Gibbs, what happened? You look hurt.
Nothing?
You need to roll me deception.
I mean, can I argue that? It's just so obvious that Gibbs is lying.
They don't even need a roll deception. There's no deception.
But, like, Gibbs is saying that and then, like, kind of, like, did the guard leave or is the guard still there?
Guard's downstairs. He's, like, staying away from the conversation.
Like, Gibbs is just still, like, looking at Evie, looking to, like, where the guard was and just, again, hugging the orb closer.
Evie looks at you and says, Gibbs, you're hurt.
No,
did Viper do something? What happened? And you can see that Evie begins to get a little mad and riled up. It was a mistake to leave you with them. They're irresponsible.
No, Evie, Viper didn't do this. It was a mysterious monster from the sky.
Evie puts her hand on her head and begins to rub her forehead and says, Gibbs, if you want to lie to me, please make a better lie.
No, a monster
from the sky?
Yeah, and it was in a spaceship following a time traveler.
Evie, for the first time that you've known her, looks lost.
And then the monster turned into me, and I had to fight myself, and then I kind of had to watch myself die, but it wasn't a big deal because I knew it wasn't me. But then I dropped this red orb. Do you know what this is? Look, it's cracked. I don't know if I can fix it. Oh, I should try that. And Gibbs casts mending on it.
Do you have spells yet?
Yes, mending is something I get as a Rachno? As an artificer? Something. I think as a Rachno.
I just want to make sure because I know that you don't get spells to level 3.
Yeah, I do have mending. That's it.
So you cast mending on this sphere, and the crack on it closes up. Evie watches you do this, and gets down onto both knees now, and is basically sitting in front of you. And she looks at you and says, Gibbs, you don't lie to me, or at least you haven't before. Not serious lies. Are you telling me the truth?
Yeah.
Okay. I believe you then. But we still need to talk about what happened earlier today. The fight with Rhea. The guards are here about this. They need to speak to you both. Well, to you and the rest of the people who were there.
Okay. I guess. Do we have to talk to them, like, now? Or can it wait till, like, maybe tomorrow night?
Evie looks at you and she sees how you're asking, and the fact that you're beaten up and hurt and covered in dirt, and everything, and there's green goo on your hands, and, like, she takes you in as a whole. She nods and says, I understand. How about this? You go wash up, get ready for bed, have Ezra put some bandages on you, and I will go talk to the guard. Is that alright?
Gibbs nods.
Alright. So, Evie stands up, waves over Ezra, and Ezra basically reaches down to pick you up, if you consent.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so Ezra picks you up and carries you to where, like, the medicine and stuff is, along with a few bandages and that sort of thing and salves. And Evie goes downstairs to speak with the guard.
Okay.
We are going to hop over. Did you want to do something?
I was going to have a conversation with Ezra if it was okay for me to drag the scene out a little longer.
Sure, sure.
All right, because I just imagine as Ezra is, I don't know, patching up Gibbs. Mm-hmm. They're just going to, I mean, they're quiet for a little bit, then they speak up and say, Ezra, you're Vayu's friend, right?
I thought I was, but I don't know. After what happened today, I just, look, I don't really know if I should be talking with you about this.
Well,
I mean, I work here, it's a little weird.
Well, Vayu didn't really do anything wrong.
Ezra sighs and looks at you and says, I really want to believe that. I do. But...
Well, I was there. I can tell you exactly what happened. Because I don't think Evie would listen to Vayu. Like, Evie kept interrupting when Vayu was trying to explain. Then Vayu got really upset. But if you're Vayu's friend, then...
Gibbs, I understand what you're trying to do. And I really appreciate it. Trust me, I do. But... if Vayu wants to tell me what happened, I want it to come from them. And you know, roll me insight with disadvantage on this thing.
Aww. The second one was a nat 20.
What was the first one?
It's a 10.
It's a 10. Okay, so with a 10, when he says this, you can see that a slight blush crosses his face.
So Gibbs will say, great, I'll be seeing Vayu in the morning. I can tell them to come talk to you.
Ezra sort of chuckles and nods and says, all right, well, you're all patched up, so why don't you get off to bed?
Okay. Oh, but first, do you know what this red orb is?
Rolls.
I have no clue. Where'd you get that?
Oh, okay, well, if you don't know, I'll just go then. Bye!
And you scamper off before you can say anything.
Yeah.
Gibbs is such a mood.
I love Gibbs so much.
So we are going to cut over to Vayu. Vayu, you were heading home. Or at least that's what you told the group. Are you actually heading home? Are you heading to the secret underground criminal organizations of Ragon? Where are you going?
Vayu's double life as a mobster that we haven't mentioned until now.
Like the bird?
The bird is the mobster, actually. I think Vayu's plan is to head home, check in, and then go train, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Just go out in the field and think about their life.
Mm-hmm. So,
but they want to check in first because they just need to see their mom and their sister mm-hmm. right now.
So you head home, and there are a lot of lights on when you get there. It seems that everyone is still awake. The moment you open the front door, you can hear the cawing of Vayu Jr. as they fly over to your shoulder.
My little baby boy.
Because you left him at home the entire day and he missed you. But the second thing that you see, besides Vayu Jr., is your mom, who enters the hallway and looks at you and has this very concerned look on her face. And she says, Vayu, there are some men who are here to see you. They have some things that they need to talk to you about. Something that happened today in the town. They won't tell me much because I'm apparently not the person who was involved, so it's not important to tell me, but I feel like I should be there as your mother. And the fact that you're still a child, but they said that they need to speak to you in person. And I'm not sure what to do here. Fayu, what happened?
Nothing. Well, not nothing. I don't want to say nothing. Well,
Fayu, you're scaring me. Please, what happened?
I run up to her and I just like pull her in a hug first, and I'm like, I'm okay. Everyone's okay. Just breathe with me.
She gives you a hug back and she begins taking deep breaths with you. Are you using like the calming methods that you use for meditation, or are you just like breathing like?
No. No, Vayu is not hyper. Like, they're definitely doing like some nice deep breaths and just kind of like trying, because she seems very worked up. So Vayu is just trying to do like a nice like in out kind of sit. So yeah, like meditation.
So your mom follows your breathing and then pulls back and says, "Go to the kitchen. They're waiting for you there. Ask them if I can sit in on this conversation, because I would really like to be there as your mother."
I think you should just come. If they have a problem with it, then that's their problem, because I want you to be there.
She sees this sort of, like, braveness from you and, like, gives you this look of, like, suspicion, but also pride. And she just sort of nods and says, "All right, we'll do it together." And you two walk into the room. Standing in this room, there are two guards, dressed in full armor. They have swords on their sides and everything. They seem geared up. And as you enter the room, their conversation ends, and they look at you and your mother and say, "Vayu Hidari."
Yeah, that's me, all right.
"By order of the five ambassadors, you are commanded to come to the ambassador building tomorrow morning."
Okay.
"The charges against you are attempted murder and assault. Please report in the morning on time. You should be there right after the sunrise."
Okay. Vayu was kind of expecting, an interrogation, I guess, so they're very taken aback to just have that commanded to them. So they just kind of like nod in shock and they're like, "All right, I will."
"Good. If you aren't there on time, we will come for you."
"No, there will be no need for that, I can guarantee you. Please don't worry. I will be there."
"I would hope so, but you've already disappeared once today."
"I would like for you to leave now." I just kind of wave. Just a nice, like...
As you do that, your mom sort of sees you do and says, "Yeah, I would like you to leave now! Leave my house!" And then she sort of, like, realizes that she just had this outburst and begins to sort of, like, wring her hands with a dish towel. And the guards sort of look at her curiously and then give a slight nod, and they both leave.
I watch them go.
So after the guards leave, your mother looks at you and says, "You tried to murder someone?"
Okay. Listen. I walk her to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, sit her down in the chair, and I sit down across from her.
And Vayu Jr. hops onto the table expecting birdseed.
And then I pat his little head because he's adorable. And that's it. I don't feed him. Sorry, Vayu Jr. And then I, like, reach out my hand and take my mom's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at her, and I say, "There, a lot happened. But what you need to know is that some really, really awful people tried to hurt Rhea today. And I did what I had to. And I don't think I did anything wrong. And they can tell me whatever they want. They can... I hurt a man. But he was trying to kill a little girl. I don't think that the trade-off there is bad. And that's just how I feel about that.
As you're saying this, giving this speech to your mother, you begin to feel her grip tighten on your hand as you're saying all of this. And she looks at you with almost tears in her eyes and says, "Your mom taught you so well. I agree, you did nothing wrong. And whatever they say, whatever they try and do, we'll fight it. You're gonna be okay. We're gonna make sure you're okay. You're a hero, Vayu."
Vayu kind of tears up at that. And it's just like, "Thank you. I love you.
I love you too. Now, why don't you go off to bed? You have to be up early in the morning."
"Yeah. Is Amala asleep? Or..."
She tried her hand at fire breathing twice. It kind of exhausted her out, but... She's asleep right now. I'm sure you could talk to her in the morning.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do that.
Alright.
And I just, like, squeeze her hand again, and then I get up. And actually, I think Vi's gonna go to their room and just try and, like, for once in their life, try and meditate. I know, out of character.
What are you doing for this meditation? Are you just focusing on the day's events? Are you focusing on yourself and your breathing? How does Vayu actually get into meditation? You've done it once before in a big way during our backstory, but...
Right.
What about this time? What are you doing this time?
I think Vayu is just like... going over the day's events and just like they just kind of like they think about the moments that stressed them out the most, I think, like seeing Rhea in danger and Evie talking to them and seeing the monster and things like that, and they like think about it and then they just kind of like breathe and like try to like release it and like not push it away, but just kind of like, "All right, that happened," and just kind of like accept it, I guess.
All right, so you go into this meditative state and you see these events of the day, these terrible moments that have happened in this incredibly long day, and you begin to release them. You aren't pushing them away, you aren't forcing them away from you with rejection. You are merely saying, "It happened. I can move on." And you enter a meditative state. Holland, what are you doing, my friend?
So immediately after Gibbs and Vayu leave, Holland's going to kind of search through Malachi's pockets and see if he's got anything.
Okay. So you decide to rifle around this unconscious man's pockets.
Oof.
So... you go through Malachi's pockets, and you find two things. In his robe, you find a locket. It seems to be one of those ones that's... You find a locket. It has a silver chain, and the actual locket is made of silver. There is a clasp on it. In addition, in one of his other pockets, you find a small, what looks to be, spell book. Written in a script that you cannot translate.
I'm gonna take a little bit and identify ritually the locket, see if it's anything magical.
Locket? Yeah. Alright, so you cast Identify to look at this locket, and when it's done, what does Identify look like for you, actually? When you cast as a ritual.
It's nothing... Identify is pretty... basic, I feel like. It's very mentally focused. But, like, as a ritual, if I'm taking the time to focus on it and make sure I can and I make sure I can do it. I feel like Holland's going to place this locket on the ground, and he's just going to clear an area around it, and enveloping around, surrounding the locket, he's going to trace, like, on the floor, just with his fingers, nothing special, the symbol of the Pantheon. And he's going to continue doing that, and, like, after a couple times around while he's focusing on this spell, when he does it, like, the trail lights up. And just, like, a soft glow happens around it. And, like, he does that, and at the end of the spell, if it is magical, it continues being lit. And if it is not, it dims.
So you finish the spell. You finish drawing the four-pointed star, and you stare at it as this locket's in the center and the light is glowing, and it very quickly dies out. And the light disappears.
He's going to return the locket and the spellbook back to Malachi's robes, wherever he found them. He's not going to look inside the locket because he knows that that is a personal effect. It's nothing special. And he's not going to pry. And then he's just going to sit with his back against the door, and he's exhausted, and he's just like, his instinct is to go and to check up on Fleur and to make sure Gibbs and Bayou are okay, or to go and see how Quinn is doing with his parents. But he can't really do that right now because Malachi's here and he doesn't know what else to do. Right. He just drifts off to sleep like that.
So I think that's where we're going to end this session, with the three of you heading to bed.
Hi everyone, this is Sam and Russ. I'm sure you have all noticed that Ben did not speak in this episode and that Elsie had to leave the party. We just wanted to tell you that episode 4 was Ben's last.
On August 8th, 2018, Ben passed away. He was surrounded by the people who love him, and his last days were filled with love and joy. We are still processing this event, so we ask that you respect our privacy in the days to come. Before Ben passed, he asked us to continue the podcast, and so we will.
We have already recorded the next 2 episodes, so we will try our best to release them on our regular schedule. However, we hope that you all understand if there is a hiatus. As Russ said, we are still processing this loss. So for any updates on the situation, please just check our Twitter. All links can be found in the episode description as usual.
And as Ben would say, good night, my shining stars.